From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo rolls out a $152 billion budget proposal. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the governor's plan, and a new report finds the regional greenhouse gas initiative has had a positive impact on the health of residents in the Northeast. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Some state lawmakers are rejecting Governor Cuomo's proposal to extend a tax on millionaires. Cuomo spent Tuesday this week rolling out his spending plan to individual groups of lawmakers in private briefings, then at night released details to the public. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The governor fulfilled the state's constitutional deadline to release his budget to the public, but just barely, opting for an evening unveiling of the $152 billion spending plan. Cuomo's proposal includes $1 billion more for schools and the extension of an additional tax on New York's highest income earners, known as the millionaire's tax, in order, he says, to pay for education spending and close a budget gap. Cuomo says to end it now would be devastating.
We have a $3.5 billion deficit. Frankly, we don't have the resources to lose the millionaire's revenue now and have this state function the way it should.
The governor also laid out some of the details of a plan to offer free tuition at public colleges to families making $125,000 a year or less. He says it would help address a growing middle-class anger that's been playing out in the recent presidential election.
The anger is hopelessness. That's what it is. It's hopelessness. It's, I've been stagnant in my life for 20 years. I'm making $80,000. That was supposed to be a lot of money. Everything has gone up. And now my kid can't go to college.
Some state lawmakers received separate briefings at the mansion earlier in the day. Senate Republican Majority Leader John Flanagan says he likes the extra school aid spending, but his GOP conference is not on board with extending the millionaire's tax, though he's not completely ruling it out.
I think it's too early in the game for me to just say this is a deal breaker on this subject or anything else, frankly.
Flanagan says he still has concerns about the governor's plan to offer free tuition, saying he's concerned that it would not be offered for private colleges as well.
I said to you, hey, you want free tuition? Like, yeah, okay, I want free tuition. Who doesn't? But if it means that we're going to lose 10,000 jobs because companies are closing, then what's the point?
The Senate leader does like a proposal for middle-class tax cuts for New Yorkers making up to $300,000 a year. Cuomo's relationship with the legislature has been tense recently, and several senators skipped the briefing. One senator, Tom Croce, said he didn't attend because he disagrees with the governor's decision to tell lawmakers about the budget before informing the public about how taxpayers' money would be spent. The senators were not given a total number for the governor's spending plan, and they received no written documents or bills to read. Susan Lerner with Common Cause says the budget rollout lacked transparency.
We're very concerned that the process is going backwards. It's being arranged in a backwards way. First, let's have the book and an explanation of the book. Let everybody dig into the details.
Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie and Assembly Democrats were to get their own budget briefing, but debate in the chamber went late and they opted to skip the mansion visit. Hastie, speaking earlier in the day, downplayed any controversy, saying he's not concerned with the way the budget is presented, saying what matters is the substance contained in the spending plan.
What's in it is really what matters to us, and that's what we really want to get down to business. That's why our constituents sent us here.
The budget, as presented, is basically in balance, but Cuomo concedes that if the Republican Congress repeals Obamacare and its related Medicaid subsidies, then the budget plan could have a multi-billion dollar hole, and he says there's no contingency plan. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, this week, Governor Andrew Cuomo released a budget proposal. However, he did it a little differently, like he did his regional State of the State addresses. He did it in briefings with state lawmakers privately. It's a $152.3 billion budget, and it includes things like his wish to extend a tax on millionaires. Your thoughts on the governor's not only budget, but the process by which he went about it?
Well, it's interesting. He's at war with the legislature, particularly with the state Senate, but also, which is controlled by the Republicans, but also with the Assembly, who are really angry that they didn't get their raise. They refuse to do the ethical things that they need to do to bring this state, along with so many others, creating ethical standards that you can't get around. It's ridiculous. We all know that it's, if not illegal bribery, then legal bribery, that you have outside businesses or that you're allowed to, where people come to you. Why? Because you're the state senator or because you're the state assembly. Give me a break. Everybody knows about it. The Congress has refused years ago to have that happening and put a limit on it, a very low limit on how much anybody could make outside. It ought to be happening here. The governor puts it all up. The governor, of course, lost his left to Zephyr Teachout pretty early last time, and he's not going to let that happen again. So we have a whole bunch of stuff that he's saying we need, including free college tuition to anybody who happens to make less than $125,000 a year. That brings the middle class in, and they are therefore in the game. They have skin in the game now, as opposed to just giving a break to those people who have the very, very least. It was a brilliant political move, and it also happens to be the right move. Well, in any case, he is now at war with them, so he meets with them separately. He doesn't meet with them in the chamber. He doesn't bring it down for a road and pony show down into the guts of the legislature in a much bigger room. He is redefining the way that there is a relationship between a governor and the legislature. Let me say, there isn't a good word around for him. And as a result, he meets with them. But of course, into all of this comes Donald Trump. He's talking about revising Medicaid. The governor goes down to New York. He meets with Trump in Trump Tower, I guess, and he says, you know, you're going to kill us if you do this. And I'm sure that President-elect Trump is very concerned with that, as a New Yorker that he is. After all, he did build the Wallman Rink and the carousel, rebuild it, got his name all over the place. Let's see now how much he puts out for New Yorkers now that he's going to be the president of the United States. And speaking of which, what a huge crowd is expected as we speak in New York City at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza. I think it's 10 o'clock in the morning, something like that, maybe 10:30. And they're going to be marching down towards Trump Tower, up Fifth Avenue. And same thing's happening in Washington, D.C., and all over the world. Vienna, you name it, they're doing it. And this is going to be a very interesting thing to watch. What a president-elect thinks as he sees this kind of reaction to what he does. I know that he's considering himself the new Andrew Jackson. Well, Andrew Jackson must be turning over in his grave.
Let's continue with Governor Cuomo. He also spoke with Trump about, of course, the Affordable Care Act, its repeal, and the hole in the budget that that could create, housing and infrastructure. But what about what politicians say publicly and privately to different audiences? We heard from Ken Lovett this week of the New York Daily News, who mentioned that while Governor Cuomo has been playing nice of late with President-elect Trump in a private meeting with Democrats, he said it's hard to budget with a lunatic.
And don't think that that doesn't get back to President-elect Trump. Look, Cuomo's got a problem. He lost his left. We know that when he ran against Zephyr Teachout. She almost won. She won upstate. She got a lot of votes, a lot of the Bernie-type votes in New York City, the progressives. So on the one hand, if he wants to be president of the United States, and we're pretty sure he does, then he has to bring the left along with him. He can't lose them. And so he unleashes a epithet which basically says Trump is a lunatic. That will certainly get him some votes from the left. On the other hand, he's got to live with Trump. And he knows that if Trump pulls a particular kind of switch on Medicaid or one of those things that New York is going to be deep in the fiscal hole. So it reminds me a lot, David, I've talked to you about this before, of the governor of New Jersey many years ago. His name was Hughes. And they used to call him Two Bucket Hughes because he was always balancing a pail of water on either shoulder. He could not, you know, and when he walked back and forth, he had to keep those two buckets there. Same thing with Cuomo.
Well, finally, corruption. Former New York State Senate leader John Sampson sentenced to 5 years, not for the actual allegations, but for lying to the FBI. The long trail of lawmakers into the hoosegow is continuing. And with that, are we going to ever see ethics reform in New York?
No, they don't want to do ethics reform because they know it will crimp their style. And by the way, David, if an FBI man ever comes and sits down across from you and starts to ask you a question, don't lie, because that's the crime. Even if you have other kinds of violations, they won't get you on that, but they're going to certainly get you on the lying to the FBI. So, therefore, the ethics issue, it just goes on and on and on. They won't do what they have to do in order to clean up their act. They're not fooling anybody. They say they don't want the governor telling them what to do or trading, you know, ethics for pay raises and how insulted they are. It's disgusting.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new report argues the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative has positively impacted the health of residents across the Northeast. We get an update from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The analysis of the public health impacts of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative 2009 to 2014 issued by Apt Associates found that REGGIE benefited public health, quote, including avoiding hundreds of premature deaths and tens of thousands of lost work days, unquote. It charts a cumulative $5.7 billion in health and productivity benefits in every participating state and certain neighboring states. New York, Massachusetts, Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Maine, Delaware, and Maryland make up REGGIE. The study finds REGGIE resulted in an estimated 300 to 830 avoided adult deaths, 13,000 to 16,000 avoided respiratory illnesses, and 35 to 390 avoided heart attacks. Apt Associates conducted the independent analysis. Lead author Michelle Mannion explains it is one of a series of reports called the REGGIE Project that assesses the various impacts of the program.
The focus on health is a really key one. The intuition behind it is that when you're reducing greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuel plants, you're also creating reductions in other air pollutants. And so this is really the first kind of retrospective study, meaning, you know, backwards looking at an actual program's performance to explore to what degree air pollutants were reduced in addition to greenhouse gas emissions.
Mannion notes that air quality has been improving in the Northeast for decades due to a variety of factors, including the Federal Clean Air Act and changes in the electricity market.
That was really the trickiest part of this analysis, was isolating the direct contribution of this particular program amidst all the other things that are happening at the same time. And so we relied upon modeling of the electricity market that really had kind of two different scenarios. And the first scenario was looking at what actually happened in the market, which did include the REGGIE program. And we also had results of a scenario that looked at everything else being equal, but removing the aspects of the REGGIE program. So we had these two kind of scenarios to compare and contrast to tell us exactly what REGGIE's incremental contribution to air quality was.
Environmental Advocates of New York Executive Director Peter Iwanowitz notes that power plant pollution is known to create health problems.
What is very intriguing to me, however, is that a program that is focused in on climate change and the climate pollution has generated so much positive health benefits. That means that not only is the carbon getting reduced from these power plants, that the efficiency of the plants has gone up in such a way to reduce other harmful gases, toxic emissions like mercury, soot that's related to fine particulate matter and acid rain, as well as the smog precursors that relates to the summertime haze that is a big, powerful respiratory irritant.
Environment New York Research and Policy Center campaign organizer Melanie Pearl notes that the air in the state is getting cleaner because steps have been taken to clean up pollution, especially from power plants. The new report shows that greenhouse gas pollution has fallen via REGI while saving lives. With reservations about potential national environmental policies, Pearl says the group is asking New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to create statewide policies that would cut pollution twice as fast.
The governor actually proposed to reduce our regional limit on global warming pollution from power plants by 30%. You know, that's a step definitely in the right direction, but we can and must do more faster, especially with that new incoming administration.
A link to the report is available at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Water contamination has affected communities around New York State. And last week, the village of Hoosick Falls voted to table a settlement agreement with the two companies deemed responsible for contaminating their water sources with the chemical PFOA. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and reports the decision to set the agreement aside for now came after 2 hours of public comment.
Hoosick Falls Mayor David Borge opened Thursday night's meeting by recapping the story of the village's struggles with clean water over the past 2 years. After state and federal officials stepped in last year, a temporary filtration system was installed on the public water supply, and a permanent system is readying for launch. Filters have been installed on wells in surrounding homes. For months, village tap water has been PFOA-free. A settlement agreement with companies Saint-Gobain and Honeywell would have reimbursed the village for $850,000 in costs incurred in its response, but the plan was not met warmly by local residents. First to comment at the meeting was David Engel, an attorney who spoke on behalf of the Healthy Hoosick Water Group. Engel warned board members about the language in the settlement document.
The settlement would bar any further recovery by the village for damages to its current water system. The settlement should be limited to the costs incurred up to the present time and no more, and any release should be commensurate with that limited degree of compensation.
Engel submitted a 5-page letter detailing his concerns. The settlement, as written, covers out-of-pocket expenses to the village, including lost revenues due to decreased use of the public system. It also covers more than $300,000 in legal fees, $100,000 for a communication firm, and $100,000 for an engineering firm. A myriad of other costs are covered in the voluntary consent order between the state and the companies. The agreement also includes language that would bar the village from filing future suits against the companies. As the comments kept coming, some expressed a lack of trust in their village leaders. Resident Laura Peabody.
Think about it. Look how many people have showed up this evening and are asking you, pleading with you to do better for this town so that we can trust in you, our local elected officials.
Peabody then invited State Senator Kathy Marchione to the microphone. Marchione said, as an elected official, she was hesitant to give the village board her input.
If you want me to take off my state senator hat, which I can do for a moment, and put on my supervisor hat that I left many moons ago, I would say that some of the things that I have heard here give me a little bit of pause. I would say that if I were sitting in the mayor's seat, I probably would not make the decision this evening.
Marchione also took time to defend Mayor Borge against criticisms from the crowd. The room grew more tense as the night went on. At the end of the comment period, Village Board member Ben Patton responded to one member in the audience.
You have no idea what we've gone through on this board. You have absolutely no idea. Please be quiet while I'm speaking. You have no idea what we've been going through on this board.
Patton continued, saying that given the comments submitted, he could not support the deal.
The people that are here have spoken. They've given us information. And I think it would be imprudent of us to listen to everyone and then vote yes. So from my standpoint, if I had to vote right this second, I would vote no. but I would hope.
With the agreement tabled, discussion will continue at the next regularly scheduled board meeting in February.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Local elected officials in Ulster County, New York, and a citizens group are among those calling on the State Public Service Commission to retain the net metering compensation model for future community renewable projects. They held a press conference in Kingston saying net metering is important to their business models. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn was there.
Citizens for Local Power President Jen Metzger says a proposal under consideration by the New York State Public Service Commission effectively would end the current system of net metering credits for new local projects. The replacement, Metzger says, would be monetary compensation based on actual value of the project to the grid, value that could fluctuate hourly.
We don't want to be discouraging renewable development, and we are concerned that this new valuation mechanism is it's going to make the prices, the value of that power that's generated uncertain, unpredictable. It's not going to provide the certainty and predictability you need to finance those projects, and customers are going to be more worried about even pursuing those projects because they're not going to really know what they're going to get from it over the long term.
She worries the new model will undervalue the benefits of renewable projects in local communities. Metzger, a Rosendale town councilwoman, is asking the PSC at least to maintain net metering for the next 2 years and allow projects to opt into the new compensation regime if they choose to allow for market adjustment.
We're saying, look, slow down. There is no reason to end net metering for these sorts of projects right now. And the kinds of projects that would be immediately affected are community renewable projects, which are the only way for most New Yorkers to access the benefits of renewable energy ownership.
Kingston Mayor Steve Noble says he's concerned about the viability of long-term municipal projects without net metering.
Net metering is really important to be able to make sure that we can move our future renewable energy projects forward. And so one of the things for us that's really concerning about this proposal is that we don't know yet what the long-term effects will be on our municipality when we're trying to do remote net metering. It seems as though they're trying to change the rules that will make it not as, you know, cost-effective for municipalities to be able to work in developing these long-term deals.
All existing projects, though, would be grandfathered in and continue to receive net metering credits for 20 years. The discussion has been ongoing and stems from the PSC's invitation in December 2015 for ideas and comments on valuing what are called distributed energy resources, predominantly renewable energy resources. In a statement, a PSC spokesman says, quote, "For over a year, New York has been studying a number of improvements to its current system of net metering, the valuing and rewarding of solar power and other distributed energy resources to customers. Work continues in the open proceeding with public input on how New York can increase its clean energy resources while making the entire system fairer for all ratepayers." End quote. Azriel Aline is president of Kingston-based Freedom Solar Alliances. He's a 9/11 first responder and describes his business.
My goal with this program and this project that I started was to take the energy that is given to us freely from the sun to create electricity to sell to market. That energy will have a revenue stream that comes in, and we will be able to give it to 9/11 families and be able to help them with their medical bills that are not covered by the federal programs.
He says a change in the net metering model will hamper his business by reducing the profits from the electricity sold.
And so by changing it and devaluing it, it's like a feed-in tariff. And with that tariff, it reduces the amount of funds that I can give to 9/11 families and their children.
Metzger says a number of towns in Ulster County have plans to or interest in developing solar projects on their former landfills, and the new policy could impact these projects. The town of New Paltz is an example.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1703 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.